Hello and welcome to episode 175 of Speak Beastie for April 16th, 2023. I'm Amy.
I'm Marjolaine.
And I'm Shannon.
Yay.
I feel like my voice sounds like it's the morning.
Yep, me too.
That the listeners will be able to tell the difference.
Just over here chugging my coffee, hoping it clears up.
Yeah, and for once, it's the middle of the day for me, so because I don't remember if it was last recording or the recording before, but it was really late for me. And I felt like, oh my God, my English is even worse than usual. So. But I blame the late evening. But today I have no excuse.
Well, it's our turn to suffer over the recording time.
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by Speak Beastie Patreon supporter, Ash. Yay, Ash.
Yay.
Ash is actually one of my students, fun fact.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
So thank you so much for your support. We appreciate it.
So do you feel like it's also a way for Ash to tell you that you're a good teacher? Or
you know, I don't know if it's that or if she's spying on me and trying to catch me and saying something that I would yell at her for saying.
Yeah, maybe it's just to have the bloopers and so they can have fun and tell the other student, yay.
Mm-hmm. A little blackmail.
Yeah.
All right. Well, moving into the Phoenix Register, there is none.
Oh.
So the delivery owls for the paper are taking a break, I guess. But they are delivering the mail. We have some
That's
owl
good.
Post. Mm-hmm. So, we have owl post from Carolyn, who answered the podcast question from episode 173. So the podcast question from episode 173 was, what happened to Grindelwald to make him hate Muggles? So Carolyn says, could his hatred be rooted in persecution of witches by Muggles? Historically speaking, witch hunts were all about rounding up what were considered dark arts. Witches were thought to be the devil's servants and eradicated. Could the knowledge of this history make him want to dominate them?
Yeah, that's... Maybe. Actually, we had this question from what Mal said, and mm-hmm. That's what I... figured mm-hmm. to what he was implied into his comment that because of the persecution of wizards and witches that maybe, but I was wondering if maybe something more personal happened to to him, but maybe it's just like, yeah, I know history and I know Muggles were horrible to us, so we need revenge. Maybe that's just that. I mean, it's a good enough reason to be to create an ideology, but yeah.
It stinks that we don't really know a lot about Grindelwald's family and his upbringing before he got to Godric's Hollow. There's just not much we know. What we do know is that Grindelwald did have these ideas of hating Muggles by the age of 16. So whatever... it was that kind of ingrained that in him happened pretty early in life. We do know he went to Durmstrang, and Durmstrang isn't exactly known for tolerance of Muggles since they don't even admit Muggleborns into the school. So maybe it's just the teachings there and that environment and that idea of them not even being, you know, worthy of coming here and learning about magic.
Yeah, about Durmstrang, I wonder if the bad reputation was already there when the mm-hmm. when he went to school there, because I was almost wondering if it was because of Grindelwald that Durmstrang right. got bad True. Reputation, but because we know that he was expelled, because even for Durmstrang he was too extreme, so yeah.
So Sophie also answered this question, and she said, I always thought he was just of the opinion that wizards are better and therefore should rule over muggles. So yeah, just some sort of deeply ingrained ideology, I guess, and just maybe what he grew up around.
Yeah, we feel like, especially in the second movie, we have more of, and even in the first one, even more in the first one or the second one, I don't know, but it feels like more resentment that we are wizard, we have powers, and despite of this power, we have to hide, and we should not be the one to hide. So maybe it's not just a hate rooted in something the Muggles did, mm-hmm. but more the fact that we should not be reduced to hiding. We mm-hmm. are the powerful, and we should be out. But personal or more general hate? That's the question.
So many options.
All right. Well, that's all we have for Owl Post. That's all we've got. But good stuff. Keep them coming. We like to hear what you guys have to say and chime in with our discussions.
Yeah, I don't know if we should have more backstory on Grindelwald. Maybe it's good that we have something to speculate about and have our own interpretation. That's also quite fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into the main discussion here, which is scenes 72 to 75 of the screenplay. We also have a lot of graphics in this section.
Yeah, we do.
But let's get into the scenes. So first up, scene 72. Interior room of requirement, moments later, morning. So Newt, Theseus, Lally, and Jacob enter the room where Bunty and Dumbledore are already standing with Newt's case and five identical cases. And then, of course, the huge, giant Bhutanese prayer wheel, which we'll get to in a second. And Jacob asks, hey, Newt, what is this place? And Newt says, the room we require. All right.
So I feel like this is, like, so up to interpretation as to whether Newt actually knows about the Room of Requirement, or if this line is just to clue us in and it's just a coincidence of how he's worded that.
Yeah, but if he didn't knew about the room, how did the group knew where to go to
meet
them?
That's true. I wonder, like, what would Newt have used this room for when he was at school?
Hiding beasts.
Yeah.
Be like Hagrid on another level, hiding not just an acromantula, but like everything.
It was just like a beast hospital.
Yeah. It's where he created the case and maybe used the magic of the room to get the idea of creating the case. True. That's a good
That. So then when he graduated, well, he didn't graduate, he got expelled. when he left Hogwarts, he had to take it all with him in his suitcase.
I could see Newt being, you know, such an isolated kid. I could see him finding the Room of Requirement on accident. Mm-hmm.
Well, I could see him being so distracted that he's just walking back and forth in front of it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and then it opens. Yeah. Yep. Just thinking about his beasts and where he's going to hide them. And then, boom, there's the room.
And that's canon now.
Yeah. Because in the flashback in movie 2, we see that he's using little corner of the castle to, but at some point it must be too tiny, so yeah.
Or he's got just like multiple little drop points. All right, so let's talk about this Bhutanese prayer wheel. I know we talked about prayer wheels a little bit when the trailer first came out. We figured out what this was. But I don't know how much we got into them. So I went and did some prayer wheel research. So prayer wheels, they have mantras. They're a, you know, Tibetan Buddhism thing. So they have mantras written or printed on scrolls that go inside the hollow center of the prayer wheel. And the mantras will be written like millions of times over. I don't know how that fits, but so the act of spinning the wheel equals saying the prayer millions of times. And spinning the wheel also sends manifestations of the mantra's deity out into the world. And so one of the sources I got most of this information from, khanacademy.org, said, if there are 1 million Manjushri mantras in the prayer wheel, then 1 million emanations of Manjushri will go forth with each turning of the wheel and proceed to benefit the beings of the world.
So I always thought this was super random and like such a weird choice for how to transport them. But I guess if you're talking about duplications and multiplications, then I guess it kind of does sort of make sense with what's going on in the scene.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
still random, but like I kind of get like where it's going.
Yeah, I wonder if it's maybe another type of magic, and I'm really interested in they don't explore that much in the movies, but how magic can be different in different parts of the world, and maybe using a prayer wheel, it's different from a portkey. I know we will talk about that later, but maybe there the magic is it's working differently and inspired by how this is used by moguls and religious wizard of the country. I don't know.
I wonder if like there are set prayer wheels throughout the world that are like direct doorways to Bhutan, but I don't know. I did think that while doing this research. I was like, wait, what does this have to do with transporting into Bhutan? Maybe you can't apparate into Bhutan.
Maybe it's specific for the Chilin ceremony.
That too.
Because there are all the drawings of the Chilin all over the prayer wheel.
So
and the Chilin is bowing. It's an animated picture of the Chilin that is bowing when Dobodo is activating, I guess, the wheel.
So that's the carvings on the outside of the prayer wheel can also be mantras or like symbols of deities. And then of course this one has the Chilin on it, which I think makes sense. And so most of the time when you look up prayer wheels, you're going to see handheld prayer wheels, but there are like really big ones like this one that are turned by hand or by some other power like wind or water, and they'll be in like temples. And then the natural elements that turn it are blessed by touching the wheel, so like the wind or the water. And using a prayer wheel is just kind of a meditation practice in mindfulness. I watched a video about how to use a prayer wheel from the YouTube channel Kachara, And like one thing this guy mentioned in it is he was showing how to use a handheld one that's like on a little stick that you hold. Mm-hmm. And he said like you're supposed to turn it clockwise. But he said like if you accidentally do it counterclockwise, nothing bad's going to happen to you. That's not how it works. It's just an exercise in mindfulness to think about, okay, I'm supposed to do it clockwise and kind of be conscious of it. And another quote I saw from Lama Zopa Rinpoche was, to benefit sentient beings, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas manifest in the prayer wheel to purify all our negative karmas and obscurations and to cause us to actualize the realizations of the path to enlightenment. So that's kind of what a prayer wheel is. It's a very interesting little thing. And yeah, it's a very interesting choice for this scene. It's cool.
Yeah, but again, I think that's really interesting that you did all this research, because that makes me think how maybe it using the prayer wheel is maybe just a way to channel the magic.
Yeah.
So, but it's a it's Bhutani's way to channel the magic that they don't use with a port key, or they use another, like the occidental, the Western way to do magic is through wand and words, but maybe other elsewhere in the world they use other type of way to channel the magic. So
I think there's a lot of ways to interpret its use. So as we go on in the scene, Dumbledore makes sure everyone has their tickets for the Walk of the Chilin, because they need them to gain access to the ceremony. And then we've got a little graphic here of a ticket, which shows a Chilin bowing with a sort of temple silhouette behind it. And lettering that clearly says Walk of the Chilin, but looks funky.
The border on this is pretty cool too. It's got the Chilin is bowing in the corners, and then it's got like the wands. It's pretty cool.
Grindelwald got to these graphic designers like ASAP and was like, listen, we're gonna have the actual Chilin, so we're gonna need to do a Walk of the Chilin tickets.
Yeah, and actually in the movie magic book for the movie, they talk about the tickets a bit, and they said it's on a type of local papyrus, and I was a bit surprised because I was I'm not sure there is papyrus in Bhutan. And there's not. And I discovered that actually in Bhutan, they have a very old and renowned tradition of paper making. And it's made of Denak fiber. And I even found that Bhutanese paper is one of the most renowned paper in Asia. So they don't need papyrus. They have their own paper, very fancy paper. So.
I guess it kind of looks like papyrus, but...
It more looks like, rice paper, I don't know.
Yeah. That's cool, though.
Yeah.
So then Dumbledore asks Newt if he can tell which case is his, and he takes a long moment, and then he's like, no. And the Chilin is in one of the cases. I mean, presumably it's in Newt's case. And Jacob's like, it's like a three-card Monty thing, and everyone stares at him, and he's like, it's like a shell game thing, it's like a short con, it's a muggle thing. Which is, I don't know why this is only a muggle thing, but it's funny.
And so the first time I saw the movie, I didn't have the French subtitles, and I was like the wizard in the room. I was what is he talking about? Because we don't fricandantes, we don't call that that in French, and I didn't even knew the French term. I knew the goblet thing. Knew that was a goblet thing, but I didn't knew it. They had it. It had a name, so I was okay, sure, Jacob.
It's very fun. I guess wizards wouldn't need to do, you know, three card Monty, because they would just do little magical things in their cons.
Yes.
So
yeah, it doesn't make sense to fake the ball to disappear.
So Dumbledore explains the plan.
Yeah, very dangerous plan, and and Jacob said something like, nobody dies usually in the pre-con Monty. In Dumbledore, an important distinction. And how he said like dead serious to his remark, like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I really like this little like Dumbledore being like, I want to know more about three card Monty. That's just, it's very much book Dumbledore. Like, interesting. Mm-hmm. Tell me more while we go on our little dangerous adventure.
The whole Dumbledore and Jacob dynamic, I just, I love it so much.
I wish we had more of it. So then Jacob goes to pick up a case, and Dumbledore is just kind of like, no, not that one. And Jacob picks up another one, and he's like, yeah, good. And then they go and step into the prayer wheel and disappear, however that works.
And that's exactly how Dumbledore is sure that Newt pick a specific case, thinking that he has the chilling, and he doesn't. So because so that's again a way of Dumbledore, great manipulation from Dumbledore. But
So,
master manipulator.
Bunty has the chilling, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's so well done, because it's like she's just standing next to that case, so no one's gonna grab that case. It's like, oh, don't pick up that case. And Newt's like, oh, that's my case, I'm gonna take it.
Oh, but that's exactly how Freakon Monty works, right? I don't know if you saw somebody explain to you how they manipulate the attention of the, but that's exactly that. You move your hand so you know where the people in front of you will look, and that's how you can switch the.
So maybe the balls. Dumbledore does know about three card Monty, and he's just like, Jacob, don't mention it. They get to Bhutan, and Dumbledore's like, Jacob, I love three card Monty, it's my favorite little muggle thing. But I couldn't tell the others. So then they all pick up a case and they all step into the prayer wheel, which I wrote here, but we kind of touched on it before, like, is it like a port key? But obviously it does not disappear like a port key. So it's some kind of special transportation.
Yeah, like a portal. And actually, we don't know if they operate exactly at the same spot or not.
I don't know. I was curious about that, like, because maybe they're stepping out of a prayer wheel on the other side. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It does not show. You know, is it like the flu network to the Ministry of Magic? Are there like rows of prayer wheels for everyone to arrive through?
Or do they just like appear on the street?
Yeah. I don't know. Tell us more. So then we go into scene 73. Exterior, base of Eyrie. Whatever. Bhutan, day. So we, green mountains rise in the distance, and at the very top, almost settled into the very sky, we glimpse the Erie. And just, you know, doing some quick Googling, the Erie is not like a real place. I mean, Erie as a word is means like an eagle's nest. But it seems like it's inspired by a little bit by the tiger's nest, which is a real Buddhist monastery on a cliffside in Bhutan. But also there's just a lot of places that kind of look like this, of like a temple high up in the mountains. It's very cool. I wonder, you know, in the wizarding world, what this temple means to them. And there's these giant steps that at the end of the movie, Aberforth is going to make his dying son walk down. So.
That's one way to finish him off.
Aberforth's like, no, I really don't want to bond with my son.
This is the longest walk ever.
I just don't understand why they have to walk down these stairs. All right.
Yeah, but the name Erie, so I don't know how you pronounce that, but yeah, I guess Erie. We don't use that in French, so I was confused in the movie Magic that they talk about in French the Eagle Nest Temple, and I was, what? Where did they find this word Eagle Nest? But I after realized that it's the kind of translation of Erie.
Yeah.
Because for me, Erie just make me think of Game of Thrones. There is a region in this world that is called the Erie, it's the mountain. So yeah.
It is a fun little thing because it's never referred to by name in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool to kind of have a name for it in the screenplay and stuff. So then Vogel is explaining that we're going to do that we have a Chilin and we're going to do the Walk of the Chilin, even though everybody has tickets that says Walk of the Chilin on it. And this is also where we see his speech is seen projected into magical ministries around the world, but the screenplay does not do like separate scenes for that, because in the movie this is where we first see Tina.
Yeah. Do we see Tina there or later in another? I don't remember.
That's a good point. But
I saw the scene yesterday. I don't remember.
I think it's here.
Yeah.
Now I'm flipping.
I just remember the projection on the British Ministry of Magic and the French singing, and I think
we see her face like later when we cut back to these. I don't think we see her until like later in the ceremony.
I think either way, the screenplay does not say.
Yeah.
Like we see Tina. And we don't know how this whole projection thing works. I'd be interested to know more about that. But
it's pretty cool though.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if this is broadcast in more than just the ministry, so that people can like tune in, maybe through the Wizarding Wireless.
That would make sense.
Because otherwise, if you don't work at a ministry, you're not seeing this.
Yeah.
I wonder if maybe all the Wizarding community has to gather in their ministry to participate, because again, we don't know how they vote, so maybe they have to be there at least to shoot their star with their wand
and try to count them all.
Yeah. I don't know. But about the Walk of the Chilin, I was wondering if maybe it's more a symbolic ceremony that they do even if they don't have a real chilling present. And like, because they have banners and they have all this thing chilling themed, and I wonder if even if they don't have a real BB chilling, they do the Walk of the Chilling as a symbolic way of choosing their leader, even if they don't I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Yeah, I think that would make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a tradition thing more than it is like an actual democratic process. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So, well, so then. Oh, so he starts his speech by saying, "It is not lost on those of us in leadership that we are currently in a world divided. Each day brings talk of another conspiracy."
And yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds about right.
I feel that. And
curiously familiar.
So then on the next page, we have a 2-page spread of a rendering of the area location with sort of the regular town in the bottom foreground and then the mountains with the temple rising in the background. It's very pretty.
Yeah. The temple looked so far away. I know. I don't know if on screen it looks so
far away. I don't think so. So then we have 2 more graphics. The first one is Butterbeer Labels and Custom Typeface. So this is all sort of meant to look like, oh, this is Bhutanese Butterbeer. And then the Walk of the Chilin ceremonial banner showing a little Chilin walking.
What is the animal that's on this Butterbeer label?
So I found that also in the research that I did for our segment, but we can talk about that here. But I forgot it was in the screenplay, but I wonder if it's a yak, maybe. I wonder if maybe this the Bhutanese Butterbeer is based on yak milk. It's yak milk Butterbeer, maybe.
Yeah, it does look like a yak.
So I want to taste that.
Yeah, interesting.
So yeah, so that's some pretty stuff. Nothing mind-blowing here. And then, yeah, Vogel pulls out the Chilin and everyone's like, OMG. So then we go into scene 74, exterior rooftops, Bhutan Day. And this is just Rosier and Helmut scanning the crowd, looking for Newt and Dumbledore and co. And just looking bad, I guess.
So if they do this Walk of the Chilin ceremony without having a Chilin other years, what do they use? Do they just, like, catch a dairy call from the market there and just be like, hey, walk? Like... Or do they just, like, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's a yak, you know? Ooh. Just like on the Butterbeer label. They just release a yak and run it around through the crowd.
Welcome the yak.
Or they just pretend that there's a Chilin there. Maybe they do a little projection thing.
It's right there. Don't you see it?
Yeah. Yeah, they have a giant figure or a Muppet or something like that.
Oh, man, a Chilin puppet would be so cool. Yeah.
The dance of the Chilin.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, and then maybe it's just a little, like, performance the local theater troupe does. And you don't actually have it bow to anyone. It's just like, look, this is what it would be like if we had a Chilin.
I wonder if the local theater troupe is kind of jealous that there's a real one this year. They don't get to perform.
They're so mad.
It's a whole rivalry backstage. Oh, they're really upset.
Yeah. They're like, we are for sure not voting for Grindelwald. We feel like he had something to do with this.
He took away our moment in the sun.
Got their puppet already. Okay, so then scene 75, exterior street, Bhutan, same time, day. And Dumbledore and Jacob are bobbing and weaving, evading dark auras. It kind of fun that at first they are kind of blending in with a group of Santos supporters. Just a reminder that Santos is the best of the candidates.
Yeah. I like that they say dark auras. Yeah. It feels a bit Star Wars for me.
I know, I was like, okay.
It's the Dark Troopers.
It's like you could have just said evil aurors, like. Okay, so then Dumbledore's like, oh, I'm actually leaving you now. Don't worry, you don't have the Chilin, so feel free to drop the case at the first hint of trouble. Which I think is great. Well, and then we have more graphics in here. So we've got a Bhutan location rendering where you can see Dumbledore kind of in the lower center. Although it does not look like Jacob is with him. Oh, Jacob is back.
I see Jacob, I don't see Dumbledore.
They're separated.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah, now I see.
Okay. But he doesn't have... Dumbledore doesn't have... Both of them don't have their coat and hat and scarves.
So the screenplay says Dumbledore casts off his scarf. As it flutters through the air, the scarf morphs into a curtain.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Oh, no, yeah, he does that. But I was...
A curtain?
Like, he brought the scarf just to do that? That's... Okay.
It's just that I don't remember the curtain.
I don't know why it's just Dumbledore being extra.
I even think the curtain is Gryffindor colors. It's just red and gold and something like that. And it's to block the view from the street. But there is streets all around them, so I don't even.
Right.
Because they are talking very low, and after he put the curtain, he talks normally, so it's not just a curtain, I guess. It's a
magical thing. There's on it,
maybe. Yeah,
probably.
It is weird, just like the way it's written in the screenplay. It's like, okay, why did that happen? We also have here a preliminary graphic for Wanted poster with space left for moving photographs of Jacob Kowalski. And it's very like, you know, it matches the other Bhutan graphics with the lettering. Mm-hmm. This mindless muggle is extremely dangerous and vicious. I like how it's both like, he's mindless, but he is dangerous.
He should be immobilized and apprehended at once.
Yes.
In possession of a counterfeit wand. If it's counterfeit, then how is it even dangerous?
Yeah. And we've
you
got
can't do anything with it.
We've got the logo for the International Confederation of Wizards here, which is just a little globe with a cool, I guess the I is a wand and then a cool C and W over it.
I also love the ICW Department of Horrors must be advised immediately by owl.
Yeah.
That's not very immediate. That owl's going to take a while.
So then Dumbledore gives Jacob this little speech and says, "You should stop doubting yourself. You have something most men go their entire lives without. Do you know what that is? A heart that is full. Only a truly brave man could open himself up so honestly and completely as you do." And then he leaves.
Dumbledore is so good at like complimenting other people for these characteristics that I feel like he wishes he possessed.
This feels so much to me like, I guess this is part of setting up that the Chilean's gonna bat a Dumbledore because it's like he's so nice, but I'm like, I feel like the movie is setting up that the Chilean is gonna bat a Jacob. That's what I feel the whole time, but then that doesn't happen. Yep. I don't know how they would have resolved that if the Chilean bowed to Jacob. I guess then it would have been like, I don't want to be leader, but I think Santos is cool. So, and the Chilean would have been like, okay, that's fine then.
Like, I feel like it has to be a wizard that the Chilean bows to, because how would a muggle end up leading?
Yeah, and it will start so many theories about, but Jacob is a wizard, see? the chilling is boring to him.
So that's it for our main discussion, our main scenes. We're getting into the really like hefty sections.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are close to the end. Soon as we reach Bhutan, I was, oh, that's close to the end now.
Mm-hmm. Well, this almost took us a year to do.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, when this episode comes out, I mean, maybe the next one, we will celebrate 1 year of the movie.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy. And still no news of the rest of them.
Well.
Anyway. So speaking of making more movies, it can lead us to our segment for today. Because we are talking about making movies. We're talking about Muggle movie magic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, please find your seats. Nomadge movie magic is about to begin.
We talk a bit about that with the images we got in the scene of the screenplay we covered, but we're talking about creating magical Bhutan. And I gathered some little piece of information from the Blu-ray featurette and the book Secrets of Dumbledore Movie Magic that I quoted earlier. And I noted that a comment from Christopher Mount, the VFX supervisor, he said that the most important thing about Bhutan to know for him was that it's a magical place, so they can do magic without trying to hide it. And sure, in the next few scenes we will see that a lot. But yeah, and they did a paper model of the village, and yeah, that's funny because if you so the paper model in the studio tour, they are all white. They don't have any colors. But there, the buildings are white. But every little, banners that they have in the streets, they are colored. So it's weird. It's white with discolored details. That's funny. And we have a comment from Neil Lamont, who is the production designer. And they said that they used books about architecture of Bhutan as references to understand how this architecture works at a very quick time, I quote. Yeah, because I guess that they were not able to travel there. Yeah. First, it's quite hard to travel to Bhutan. It's a really, it's a quite a close country that you have to pay a lot to get in there, but it was also the middle of the pandemic, so
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense.
I mean, even at least not all of the production design team were able to like go to New York in person, so it would be much harder to get to Bhutan.
Sure. Yeah. And the thing that it was a very quick time that they quoted to create Bhutan, it reminds me that they were supposed to film on location in Portugal. Mm-hmm. Not for Bhutan, but because it was supposed to represent Brazil. And if you remember, it's what we learned in our Victoria Yates interview. And so my guess is that maybe the Bhutan set is what they replaced the filming location, the Portugal's location by. Maybe they decided after they had to drop the Brazil filming and they decided to do Bhutan instead. But I don't know, because if it's the case, the chilling, it makes more sense to have the chilling in Bhutan than in Brazil.
Yeah,
so
right.
I don't know how it was supposed to be and how they changed all of it, but it seems weird that they had to bring the chilling just because they changed location to Bhutan, it's a huge change and a good change because I'm glad that we got the Qilin. But
I wonder if like originally the Qilin ceremony was supposed to take place in one of the places where a candidate was from.
Yeah.
So maybe it was like supposed to go to Portugal for Santos.
Yeah, or if there was just gonna be like scenes with Santos.
Yeah,
that would be my
guess. maybe one of the scenes was supposed to take place in Brazil, filmed in Portugal, but maybe the work of the Qilin was always supposed to be in Bhutan. I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah, but yeah, the fact that they say that they had to create this set quickly, that reminds me of that. So
yeah.
So the area is composed of several parts. We have the village, the bottom temple courtyard, the big stairs, and the top courtyard. So each of these places are set differently in the studios. And in the village, they create all the little detail of the shop, like they created for the for Diagonale, for the Place Cachée in Paris, etc. So we have Bhutanese broomsticks, but they don't show that, so I don't know what is Bhutanese broomstick. So I looked, but I didn't found anything. So if you spotted that on screen, please send a screenshot because
to see. So rude of them to not highlight it.
And they also decided to make the Qilin the united design of everything. So they even created little Qilin's puppet in the shops and souvenir Qilin themed. So yeah, it's hard to spot in the movie, but I'm sure it's there. So Minalima created, of course, lots of things for Bhutan. We saw quite a few in the screenplay. So yeah, the symbols and motifs were inspired by Tibetan and Bhutanese culture, and we cover that in the what we see in the screenplay. But they created an alphabet which is a mix of Tibetan and Roman letters. So it's actually Roman letters, but we designed to look like Tibetan, so it's directly usable in English. And I don't know how I feel about that. It's a bit, I don't know, a bit weird. It's like they do half the job. They don't want to use Tibetan because it's too hard to translate, so they use English, but they make it look like Tibetan. Yeah. I don't know if you can call that cultural appropriation, but that's borderline that, I guess.
It's very weird.
I get why they do it, because then we can, like, as an English-speaking audience, see the stuff on screen and understand what it's supposed to be saying. Whereas maybe we wouldn't get those visual clues if we couldn't read the writing.
Yeah.
But yeah, but it is weird.
It's a bit like, I don't know, it makes me think of Doctor Who when you automatically, magically translate in your brain what you see. So it's almost like we are able to read Tibetan language, even if we can't, but the way it's created, you can read it. So I don't know if it's but it makes me think of that. And of course, they put the Qilin everywhere, so in the banners, in the paintings, the objects, and like we say, even in the corner of the banners, we see the little Qilin. That's how they create the designs. And so Minalima said also the work of the Qilin in their mind took place only every 20 or 30 years. And so the locals create handmade and embroidered banners for that. And that's what everything that you see, dark blue with golden details, that's what the locals make themselves. And it's very different from the banner for the candidate. It's two different type of designs. So yeah, I obviously that's Minalima who created this, that in their head, that the Walk of the Chilling is an event every 20 or 30 years. I don't know if we can make that the canon background of the story, but yeah, that's interesting. But that adds to my view of the Walk of the Chilling being a cultural event and not and a more symbolic event and not just something that they do where they have a real chilling there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So. Well, also, I would imagine they have elections more frequently than every 20 to 30 years,
hopefully.
Too.
So. Yes.
But with Wizard, we don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah. They're a little backwards sometimes.
And they also said that usually they have the rule in this production that they always shoot outdoors when the setting is supposed to be outdoor. Mm-hmm. But there it was winter in England, so exceptionally the courtyard scene was an indoor set. But all the Bhutanese sets were indoors. They created indoors, and compared to the Berlin set and the New York set, all of that is outdoors, but there it's all indoor.
Hmm. Which presents challenges with lighting and getting it to look natural to outdoors.
Yeah, and actually for the temple top courtyard, it's not a traditional blue screen in the background, but a colored backing, the same color of the sky, so this pastel blue pink sunset. And that it's how they created this this lighting, this golden pinkish light that they have in this scene. It's not a filter on the camera, it's the real light that they had on set. So yeah.
That's cool.
So that's what I gathered for the behind the scene stuff on Bhutan. I'm sure there is more, but I didn't have the Minalima book with me. It's on my other home, so probably probably tomorrow, and I will read through that. I will. Oh, there is another piece in there that would be interested, but next time, maybe in the Patreon content. Maybe that's a good idea for Patreon content.
Yeah.
If that's I find really more in this book.
Very interesting. I do love this set. Like, it's very cool.
Yeah, but I remember that Victoria Yeats told us that the shooting in the stairs were quite boring because it was just a stair with nothing around them. They just have this nice sky painting around them. But so it's not blue screen, but at the same time, that's... not a very exciting set. The village is more fun, I guess.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Speak Beastie. Our podcast question this week is, how do you think the prayer wheel works? We would love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets, or you can email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And don't forget to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen that you are able to leave a review. That really helps us out, really gets the word out, makes people listen, and we like that.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, on Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com, and you can also support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/speakbeastie. We do a lot of cool stickers and coasters each month, and some extra content as well from the hosts.
I would now say what extra content I have planned, but I have nothing. No thoughts, not empty.
Same.
Like I said, if I find more in the Minalima magic book, something, I don't remember the title, I'll do a little thing on Patreon.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah.
We'll learn more about Bhutan.
Yeah.
I'd love to.
All right, so that wraps up this episode. I'm Amy.
I'm Marjolaine.
And I'm Shannon. Case closed.